Good evening. Welcome to the Slayer Report. Today is Thursday, May 17th, 2018 in North America. It's Friday, May 18th, early in the morning here in Sydney, Australia. I'm Catherine Alston Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. I just returned to Sydney from Uluru, where I was with Jason Bowden-Smith, Richard Dolan, and some fabulous Slayer Report subscribers for 10 days from May 7th to May 17th. I'm headed to New Zealand. That's tomorrow. I'm going to be speaking with Louis Bollinger in Auckland. We've got a Q&A on the Saturday afternoon, May 19th, and then dinner. It looks like a great group. We're basically full up. And then I'll be in San Francisco from June 1st to June 8th. We're not going to do a lunch. We're going to do tea and coffee at Court Skinner's house in East Palo Alto. We will publish that this week, and I hope to see you there if you're in the San Francisco Bay Area. September 22nd, we're going to be at the Biltmore Estate lunch with Dr. Mark Skidmore in Asheville, North Carolina. We're hoping John may be able to join us, but we can't promise because he's got some family obligations. And then I'm going to be headed to Europe before I come back and go to Asheville. So I'll be headed to Europe for July, August through Labor Day. But then I'll be back in Italy for a conference in October. You can read about it at events. And I'm really looking forward to it. I don't know if you've been watching what's going on in Italy, but we finally got the five-star in the league forming a government and threatening to leave the ECB. They want forgiveness of 250 billion euro of Italian debt, and meantime, investors are dumping Italian bonds. So Italy by October should be a fairly interesting place to be. I'm looking forward to it. Our theme tonight is Inspired Human Civilization. As I said, I've been in Uluru for 10 days with Jason Bowden-Smith and Richard Dolan. We've had two groups of Slayer Report subscribers, the first 22 and then the second 20, all people living free and inspired lives. Jason calls us the popsicle people. I must say the pleasure of each other's company was really remarkable. There were lots of amazing, intelligent conversations, lots of new friendships, lots of people now in cahoots. And Uluru always inspires. It's the energy of the outback, which is remarkable. A lot of it coming from the culture of the Aborigines and the blue sky, the stars, and the creation stories. Really, each time I go, they refocus me on what is really important in life. This morning, I got to do something very special. There are three major rock formations there, but the one that is sort of secret, nobody pays any attention to it, is called Attila, is the Aboriginal name. Mount Connors is the Australian name. Anyway, we took a helicopter ride up to the top of Attila, and I stood on the rock formation. It's 750 million years old, and if you look at some of the ways it's been, I believe, adapted, or some of the formations around it, it tells you that there's a lot that's been going on there over the last 750 million years. Indeed, if you listen to the Aboriginal stories about it, it suggests that absolutely, a lot has been going on. There's one myth of the seven sisters who are running away from a man who's pursuing one of the sisters. They run to Attila, which is run by the, quote, frost people. And then from Attila, they return to the Pleiades star system. And it does look like a landing pad. One of Richard Dolan's three presentations was on ancient history. And he talked about pyramids and other anomalies that are likely evidence of advanced civilizations from other star systems. But what Uluru does when you study the culture of the Aborigines, of stories that have been transferred down from generation to generation for what's believed to be anywhere from 30 to 60,000 years, and watch and look at the paintings on the caves, What you really see is the long sweep of history and the long hand of destiny. You feel it. The human race is trying to catch up, it looks to me. And it's been trying to catch up for a long, long time now, but the race certainly seems to be on. In 2014, we did a workshop in California. And one of the things that was interesting, we asked everyone in the audience to put together a timeline of both history and the future. And what was remarkable was how short the timeline was. I think we went back to 2000, maybe 2000 BC, and or even sort of the birth of Christ. And then if you looked at how far forward we went, it was only about 25 to 50 years. And one of the things I learned listening to various people as we did it was the extent to which various lies and frustration with lies, so, you know, who killed Kennedy or what really happened on 9/11, had frozen people in time. You almost couldn't think creatively about creating the future if you were kind of stuck trying to figure out what happened in the past and what was going on in the present. It was very interesting. Uluru gets you to revitalize your time frame to something much greater, because you sort of see, again, the long sweep of history. There are other great Aborigine stories. The first time I sat under the night sky in the southern sky at Uluru in 2015, I could really feel like I was part of the Milky Way and part of all the stars. You really felt a fractal connection to them. And one of the stories I love is the story of the ancestors' campfires, that the stars are really the ancestors just having campfires and sort of waiting until we all come up and join them. And then another is how the seven planets relate to the seven main organs of the body. But either, you know, either these or other stories, you just feel like you're part of a culture, or you're hearing from a culture that is much more intimately connected with the sky and the stars and the life around them. The last night of each group, we had the fabulous Taliru dinner under the stars. And after dinner, the lights go out and the star educators point lasers at the sky. And there's nothing like the stars of the southern sky. Jason always says, you know, Australia stole all our stars. It certainly looks that way. Anyway, I'll be writing more about, just to update you on what we've been up to. But several things you can see on the website now is, one, Richard Dolan got married while we were down in Uluru, and it turned out to be quite the event, the first group. And then, and you can read all about it, lots of great pictures. And then Richard and I did a radio show for his show, and we're republishing it on the website. We talked about black budget economics and the fact that we're basically building an off-balance sheet civilization, what he calls sometimes the breakaway civilization. Money and markets. What a fascinating time in the markets it is. We have three things to watch. And it's the squeeze is on. The first is interest rates. The second is the oil price. And the third is the U.S. dollar index. The dollar index has been heading up. It broke through 93. It's interesting, at the very same time, you have the European leaders meeting in Sofia on this week, and frustrated with the decision by the Trump administration to pull out of the Iran deal and impose sanctions. RT has reported that the European Union is planning to switch payments to the euro for its oil purchases from Iran, eliminating U.S. dollar transactions. That's very interesting, and it will make it much harder for the U.S. sanctions to really happen. And so, if the EU starts trading outside the dollar, That's going to be very difficult. But we do see the dollar flying up, and that's connected with the fact that the – or let me just read from the Bill King's report today. The U.S. 10-year note kept knocking at 3.09% during early trading. The flirtation with a 3.1% yield chilled trader enthusiasm for stocks and helped foster an early double top near 2720 for the S&P 500. The squeeze is on. If anything, supporting the dollar right now, it's higher interest rates. But of course, that's going to put a squeeze on everybody and everything, including the U.S. government, because that's going to be a big chunk coming out of the budget. The energy price, the oil price shot through 80. One report from King, filling up the gas tank costs Americans an extra $4.4 billion in April. So if we're paying more in interest rates and paying more for energy, definitely the squeeze is on, although clearly this is going to be an improvement for savers and a lot of people who've been struggling with no yield. The long treasury now off 7.15% for the year, the intermediate off 4.23%, the bond aggregate down 2.9%, and junk bonds off 1%. Equities, S&P now up 2.42% for the year. Home builders down 11.76%. Higher interest rates obviously hurts them. The European ETF up 1.75%. Germany up not even a point, 0.61%. Developed markets minus North America up 1.7%. The large caps, China, up 5.2%, 6%. Small caps, China's still doing the best, up 9% for the year, and emerging markets flat, up 13 basis points, not much. The commodity index up 5.1%. Of course, the big one is oil. That's flying. And GLD, the gold ETF, now down 1% for the year. Gold not looking good. Silver down 3.63%. The hullabaloo around Israel's continued genocide of the Palestinian people continues with 30 dead in Gaza and 1,200 plus wounded. Very significant numbers. You look at what Israel's doing and you think, what are they doing? A lot of people are going to be hurt in the meantime, but Israel, as I've said many times before, I think is literally committing political suicide. I could say it couldn't get uglier, but I think it's going to. I want to talk a little bit about the swamp drama in Washington. We see leaks about Michael Cohen, Trump's attorney's financial information. If you look at the payments that Cohen was taking in from a variety of different corporate parties, it's a very ugly story. And what is coming out is extremely ugly, including payments by AT&T coming up to the time at which net neutrality was repealed by the FCC. It looks very bad. I think I mentioned last week that AT&T has laid off the lobbyist who arranged it. When you realize that the Stormy Daniels payment came out of the same entity, the timing of all this looks very bad. Now, I don't necessarily think that it's enough to prosecute a sitting attorney. But if Cohen, it really depends on what Cohen says. If Cohen was doing this without sharing it with Trump, that's one thing. If he was sharing it with Trump or even doing it for Trump, who knows? Then it's a very different story. But this is beginning to make Trump look like a swamp critter, or it has the potential to. So expect this to continue. Rex Tillerson gave a speech at the Virginia Military Institute at VMI on ethics and integrity. It was very interesting. I posted it up on the website. It's worth watching. Let me just read a quote. "When we as a people, a free people, go wobbly on the truth, even on what may seem the most trivial of matters, we go wobbly on America. If we do not, as Americans, confront the crisis of ethics and integrity in our society and among our leaders in both public and private life, and regrettably at times even the not-for-profit sector, then American democracy as we know it is entering its twilight years." And then later in the speech, he says, without personal honor, there is no leadership. Very telling point from speech from Tillerson. I agree with almost everything he said. And unfortunately, the reality is, if you look at what's going on in and around Michael Cohen, you know, it looks like the swamp is alive and well in the Trump administration. And Tillerson's words underscore the whole system. And it's funny, I thought it was a crisis 20 years ago, but I'm happy to hear Tillerson say it's a crisis now, because I think it is. And I can't tell you the impact it's having around the world in a way that doesn't have to happen. So it just doesn't have to happen. Pension fund discussion adds a new twist, and I expect, you can tell from what we wrote in the annual wrap-up, I expect the pension fund discussion to be with us for quite some time. We have a new proposal from the Chicago, or the group at the Chicago Fed. They basically ran a trial balloon at a recent conference and have now published something called How Should the State of Illinois Pay for Its Unfunded Pension Liability? What they're proposing, let me just read this to you. Illinois, in our view, Illinois' best option is to impose a statewide residential property tax that expires when its unfunded pension liability is paid off. In our baseline scenario, we estimate that the tax rate required to pay off the pension debts over 30 years would be about 1%. That means the homeowners with homes worth $250,000 would pay an additional $2,500 per year in property taxes. Those with homes worth $500,000 would pay an additional $5,000. And those with homes worth $10 million would pay an additional $10,000 a year. On top of the property taxes that already exist in Illinois, this is an extraordinary amount. Now, my attitude is I don't think there's any point in putting more milk in the bucket until you address the fact that there's a hole in the bucket. You couldn't have gotten here without a significant problem in the governance system and enforcement of the laws relating to pension fund management. And until you address that, I would be loath to put more milk in the milk bucket. I strongly recommend, if you haven't read it, you read the annual wrap-up on pensions. The web presentation is public. You can share it widely. And, of course, the PDF is available for subscribers, hard copy available at the store if you want to get a hard copy. And it, you know, it's got some great charts and graphs that are really worth it. But many people have said to me, I don't have a pension fund. Why do I care? The reality is, depending on what state you're in, it could have an enormous impact on your municipal services, on your property taxes. Imagine living in Illinois and hearing that you're going to get hit with a 1% increase in your property taxes every year for the next 30 years. You can imagine what that's going to do to the value of properties in Illinois if it ever got adopted. I've had several reports from subscribers on two issues that are really deeply disturbing. One is on San Francisco homelessness and San Francisco Bay Area homelessness, as well as increase in street drugs and sort of the resulting problems, crime problems from that. And you know, it's interesting. I had one subscriber who just flew through San Francisco on the way here, said to me, something is so wrong with San Francisco. And it really has gone from being one of the great cities of the country and a very beautiful city to something dividing between the a successful economy that's really inhuman, and then humanity really suffering. I mean, we really see San Francisco doing the They Live thing. If you haven't seen the movie They Live, I recommend it. It's very, very useful. Anyway, but I'm hoping to learn more about it when I'm in San Francisco for a week in the first week of June. The other is, I've had two subscribers explain that the response to the opioid crisis is the denial of pain medication to people who really need it, and it's appropriate that they get it. And the question is, what's happening? I don't know. I'm researching it, but I would love any more reports from any of you listening to this. If you know more about what's really happening in terms of the opioid crisis on the ground. I'm very eager to hear. Our hero this week is Alana Freeland and Clifford Carnicom. The interview this week is Harry Blaser interviewing Alana. Their early work on global spraying and Morgellons disease was phenomenal, a very important contribution. Clifford's two-hour special on the Saleri Report on what is global spraying and, what are the theories of what could be going on. We did it in 2010. It's still as relevant as it was then, and it's still one of the best pieces on spraying that I've ever seen. Let's go to the movies. Our video recommendation this week is a recent speech by Alana near Santa Cruz in California about her research on the space fence and the sort of recreation of our atmosphere and environment by a space operation funded with trillion of our dollars secretly. I think this topic is very important, and it's tricky to get your head around. So I wanted a little bit of redundance between the interview and my book review of her book, Under an Ionized Sky, as well as the interview itself. This is a great interview. Harry always does a great job of getting at the juicy parts, and he's been following Elena's work closely and has followed this book very closely and digested it. Under an Ionized Sky received a Saleri Gold Star and is listed in the best books for 2018. I can't recommend it strongly enough. It does a great job of integrating many disparate phenomena between the satellite infrastructure, the national security state, the cell towers, the networks of the telecommunication companies, HARP, and the global spraying. Anyway, so it's a really integrating masterpiece, and I think it's very important. Also, we're posting a video that Harry sent. It's kind of Lockheed Martin's version of the space fence, and it's a very interesting exercise to compare the picture we're getting of the space fence and what's going on in the atmosphere and upper atmosphere from so you get the vision from Alana Freeland and the vision from Lockheed Martin. It's very interesting to compare them. Ask Catherine. Catherine, it sounds like you're having a grand adventure in Australia. I've noticed a recurring theme in your travel reflections. The quality of life is preferable outside of the U.S. People are nicer, stress levels much lower. Could there be a relocation in your future? Wouldn't blame you. We're feeling it too. For the first time in a decade, the yield on three-month treasuries exceeds that of S&P dividends. The debate continues as to whether the increase in rates will continue. I would appreciate your take. Is it time to lock in rates at these levels, or is likely we'll see even higher rates in the coming month? One, I don't anticipate relocating in the future. I do anticipate traveling a great deal. So, I'd like to travel at least 6 months out of the year, if not more. And it is true that I find, at least in the countries I've been going to, a lot less stress than there is in the United States. I think the stress in the United States is extraordinary right now. And unfortunately, there's every reason to believe it's going to go higher. So something I want to talk with Joseph a lot about during News Trends and Stories. Then I think rates are still rising. I don't think we have more to go. And it's interesting, if you look at what you can do on a one-year high-quality bank CD, you know, one way to deal with this is to just rise the short-term market up. But I don't think that is over yet. What are your thoughts about Alex Jones being sued by the Sandy Hook families and others? I don't know. Sandy Hook is is one of those false flags where it's nearly impossible to get enough information to have an intelligent position opinion, and people who come to a definitive opinion on it are absolutely attacked. so that doesn't surprise me. How likely is it that other developed countries have also trillions of missing money in government? I believe it's likely that they have significant missing money. Whether it gets to trillions or not, I don't know. Take China as an example. With the quick development growth of that country, I would think many opportunities would allow a great deal of money to be missing. Yes, I agree. Also, do you think there is a connection between Macau and Las Vegas laundering money? Yes, if only because you have so many developers, casino operators in Las Vegas, that is the middle class is being squeezed, have jumped over to China and Macau. So do I think there's a connection? Yes. Do I know what it is? No. I believe this new question. I believe this man is onto something important. I hope you will take the time to hear him out and comment on what he has created to help us out of the matrix. I will definitely take a listen. Thank you for sending that. Okay, coming up next week, Abacus Winning Through the Power of Law with Dave Lindorf. Remarkable story about the world's smallest bank who managed to stand down one of the most incredible malicious prosecutions you'll ever hear. Then May 31st, The Many Faces of Secrecy with Amy Benjamin. I'm looking forward to that. I'm going to interview her this Sunday in Auckland. June 7th, Harry Blaser and John Rappaport are having a conversation about the deeper meaning of life. Harry wants to really dig in with John about, you know, sort of all the questions that are plaguing us now at the deepest level. And then June 14th, Future Science with Ulrich Gonegger, The Wave Genome. That'll be fascinating. So until next week, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, then you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.